Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Anna Garcia with True Crime News, the podcast. Every crime tells a story. Every story demands justice. True Crime News, the podcast, covers breaking crimes, investigating high-profile and under-the-radar cases. Every week, we dive beyond the headlines, exploring the effects of violent crimes on victims and search for justice. We hope you join us as your weekly source for true crime news. Listen to and follow True Crime News, the podcast, on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, Grant and Danny on The Fan. The show is brought to you by the law firm Kondori and Murad. They're going to help you update your last will and testament. They'll set up a revocable trust for you and your family. Schedule a consultation with their estate planning attorneys today. You can visit kmlawyers.com to do that. Tell them G&D sent you to get a discount. That's kmlawyers.com. It is time. A couple of days ahead of a critical Sunday night football game, a chance to clinch a playoff spot, to scout the opponent. Danny out today. Toby is in alongside. Grant with you. And let's bring on the guest hotline, Mark Raimondi of ESPN, who covers the Falcons. Mark, thanks for a few minutes. How are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you guys?
Doing very well. So I don't know how much we could take out of one game since the quarterback shift because the Giants are tumultuous. I mean, it's just such a terrible team that it's hard to say what was different or what was better, but take your best guess. Like, what did you learn about Michael Penix and this offense last week?
Well, the one thing that if you just look at the numbers and what they were running, there was more motion. Penix was out of the pocket a whole lot more than Kirk Cousins was, which is not going to be a surprise to anyone who watched Kirk Cousins this year. He was pretty immobile. He was pretty much confined to the pocket. Couldn't really manipulate the pocket or move up in the pocket or scramble out of the pocket for that matter. So from just a mobility standpoint, they did a lot more with Penix. So I think that's something to look for. And I think that's one of the interesting things about Atlanta over the next two games is that there's just not a whole lot of tape on Michael Penix Jr. and the offense that they're running with him, which could be an advantage, you know, going into this, home stretch here.
I mean, what is the offense going to look like that's different? I mean, is it, you know, we were talking in the break about maybe some more bootlegs and, you know, did you get to see more of what he was going to look like in training camp? We didn't get to see a whole lot in preseason, obviously. So what is different about the offense with Penix versus with Cousins?
Training camp feels like it was so long ago, so it's really hard to say. I mean, he was still very, new to everything back then, but just judging from the Giants game, there definitely was more play action and they ran motion so much more with Penix, for whatever reason. There were a lot more guys in motion. I think it was, I forget what percentage, but it was a much larger percentage with Penix than it was with Cousins. I think you're just going to see him being more mobile. There's going to be more rollouts, more bootlegs, stuff like that. And over the last, man, you know, in Cousins, the last like five games that he played, could not throw the ball downfield. And I think you'll see a lot more of that from Penix as well.
Mark Raimondi covers the Falcons with us on Grant and Danny. You know, what's interesting with Cousins was his whole career has been a play-action, drop-back kind of assassin. They were never under center. They never dropped back. And they never moved him on bootlegs. They did that 2% of the plays that he played in on dropbacks. They did that 24% of the time with Penix. So even though he's been asking for that and wanted more of that, it seems like you're saying he just wasn't capable of it from a mobility standpoint. Like the Achilles wasn't allowing him to do that. It wasn't that Zach Robinson didn't want to. Is that fair?
I mean, I asked almost every week. I asked Kirk Cousins and I asked Raheem Morris, is Kirk healthy? Is he 100%? And the answer was always yes. that he was fine. But if you look at what you just said, I mean, this is a guy, Kirk Cousins, who has been one of the best play-action passers. I mean, you guys probably know this. You know, back when he was in Washington, he was good at it back then. You know, one of the best in the entire NFL for the last decade. And it was just not a part of their strategy. It was not a part of their playbook. And I have a hard time believing that's because Kirk Cousins just all of a sudden forgot how to do that. I mean, I really believe it was just that they could not – he just was not able to get to the spot, you know, because of the Achilles and because of – yeah, you know, maybe not that he's injured, but just he's just not all the way back yet, and that's my theory. No one ever confirmed it for me, but all you got to do is look at those numbers that you just said.
When you look at their run game, Bijan Robinson maybe hasn't had the long run. I think his season long is 37 yards, but he's had an effective season. They're good in the outside zone run game as well. And you look at with Tyler Algier, what have you made of the run game this season? How important is that going to be on Sunday?
Really, really important. And Bijan Robinson is one of the best running backs in the league at running outside the tackles. And I think the Commanders are one of the worst teams at defending that particular run. So that is going to be a really, really big key. It takes the pressure off the rookie quarterback. Might be some bad weather on Sunday night. I think the Falcons are kind of expecting that. There might be some rain. And I think Bijan Robinson and Tyler Algier are going to be vitally important to the team. And Bijan Robinson has really had – it's kind of been a little bit of an under-the-radar – because he hasn't had that spectacular run like you mentioned, but he really just gets the job done week in and week out. And I'm not sure where this Falcons team would be, especially on offense, without him.
One guy watching the Falcons a lot this year that I find to be completely maddening, and the word I would use, honestly, is untrustworthy, is Pitts. You know, there's really no reason after 1,000 yards as a rookie why Kyle Pitts has become whatever version of himself he is now. How do you explain him away as a player at this point?
It's a good question. And you know, Falcons fans will tell you that they can't. You know, they really can't explain what has happened with Kyle Pitts, because there's been flashes this season at Tampa Bay. You know, had 2 touchdowns, over 100 yards, just looked fantastic. He is a true game changer. He made a catch in New Orleans this season that it almost helped, you know, help the Falcons win that game. They were not able to, but you know, just a jumping catch in traffic, and it was like, this is what Kyle Pitts can be. You know, he's bigger than everybody. You know, he's faster than everybody. You know, he's long, he's explosive, but for whatever reason, and you know, some of that in Cousins for, you know, last 5 games is he just wasn't throwing the ball downfield, like I said, and Pitts is that big play guy. Maybe we'll see, you know, Kyle Pitts come to life again with Michael Penix Jr., but it's hard if you're a Falcons fan to say that will be the case, because there has been kind of that disappointment over the last few years with him.
I mean, we all know Drake London. We remember him getting drafted high, but, you know, people that aren't as dialed into the Falcons, Darnell Mooney's had a good year, kind of resurging his career. Ray McCloud, people aren't, you know, super familiar with his game, especially when you see 34 running around there at wide receiver. What do you make of the other guys in this wide receiving core that have had pretty good seasons?
Mooney has really been a revelation for the Falcons. I don't think when he was signed back in April or March that fans thought he was going to make as you know, as much of a difference as he has. And he was really, I mean, he was one of Cousins' favorite targets, and at times he was his favorite target. He's really been a guy that, you know, he's been really good with the, you know, yards after the catch. He gets open on the outside. He's been really, really solid, and he's kind of had a career year with this new offensive Falcons running under Zach Robinson, and Cousins was a big proponent of him, and you know, we'll see what happens with him with Penix. I assume it'll be more of the same. And Ray McCloud, that's a guy that, you know, I'm glad you mentioned him, because he's a guy that of the Falcons starting receivers, he is the one who has worked the most with Penix, because they are both from Tampa and they train together in the offseason. So look out for him. I think he'll be a favorite target of Penix as well.
You could tell Kirk loved him on third down, middle of the field. You know, threw mm-hmm. to him a ton mm-hmm. when he would get one-on-one, almost like he would use like T.J. Hawkinson in Minnesota or some mm-hmm. kind of like tight end running choice routes in the middle of the field. Mark Raimondi is with us, covers the Falcons on Grant and Danny here on The Fan. Specific to their downfield passing game, did that open up at all last week? I know they only played like 2.5 competitive quarters before they started to shut it down anyway. Or was it more of the same in terms of, you know, everything kind of short and intermediate?
Penix took more shots in the first half. He wasn't always successful in all of them, but he did take a couple of shots in the first half. He had one that he actually missed Darnell Mooney on that got called for a defensive pass interference that helped set up a touchdown. That was actually a big play. And not so much in the second half because the game was pretty much over by then, but I do think that, you know, Penix, you know, seeing him in training camp, the guy is just, his arm is just incredible. I mean, his arm is ridiculous. It comes out so fast and, you know, it's just humming. Like, it's just like zipping out of his hands. And if the guys are open downfield, he's going to find them. And they need to work on their chemistry because they just have not worked together a lot. And you saw a little bit of that against the Giants. You saw some drop passes. The Falcons have been one of the best teams in the NFL in not dropping passes this year, but they were kind of dropping Penix's passes a little bit against the Giants. Didn't end up mattering, but that kind of thing could end up mattering against a much better team in the Commanders.
I wonder, on the other side of the ball, looking at Atlanta's defense, everyone's saying they've gotten a lot better because the results have been better in the last month. They really, really struggled earlier in the year. But they've also been playing Drew Lock, right? I mean, Herbert got hurt in the game where they played him. They played some bad quarterbacks here recently. Like, do you think that they figured some things out? They still don't rush the quarterback all that well? Or do you think it's kind of been a fortuitous stretch in terms of matchups?
I think a little bit of both. A little bit of both, certainly. They're definitely rushing the quarterback a lot better than they were. And I say that because, I mean, they were rushing the quarterback at an all-time horrible rate over the first 10 games of the season, right? So, you know, from week 11 or week 13, actually, after their bye on, they've been much better. I think they have at least 3 sacks per game since then, which is the best streak in the league right now. And if you would have told me that, you know, back in like week 9, week 10, I would have thought you were crazy because they were just not getting to the quarterback at all. So it has been a lot better. They definitely tweaked some things. You know, their run defense has been better, which has set up that pass rush on the passing down. So they're not facing like a second and three, a third and one as much as they were. That has definitely helped a lot too. So it's definitely gotten better, but this is still a defense that allows, you know, the highest completion percentage to their opponents in the entire league. I mean, quarterbacks are completing percentages at a tremendous rate against the Falcons defense, which is the pass rush and the secondary. It's kind of on both of them. So it's still not a great defense, but it is definitely an improved defense.
I mean, I feel like you know some of the dudes in the secondary. It's not like an incredibly, you know, big-time name defense, but you know a Jesse Bates. You know a Justin Simmons. You know A.J. Terrell. What's causing that? Is it just taking advantage of the other guys, or is it just no pass rush, and in turn you can't cover guys?
Yeah, I mean, no pass rush, and just I think the Falcons are one of the teams that are the worst at allowing the most time for quarterbacks to throw. And that puts a lot of pressure on the secondary, and there's only so much that an A.J. Terrell or Jesse Bates can do. Justin Simmons, they've all had good years. A.J. Terrell has had one of his best years. Jesse Bates is, for me, one of the best safeties and the best safety in the entire National Football League. But there's only so much that those guys can do when you just can't get to the quarterback and there's so much time for them to throw.
Caden Ellis has had a really good season, leads the team in tackles. Talk about the impact that he has made in the run game and how important he's been the last couple of years in Atlanta.
Yeah, I saw a stat today. I think since 2022, Caden Ellis has the most pressures out of any off-ball linebacker in the league. And that just kind of speaks to his versatility because he's good against the run. He's good against the pass. He's a kind of a jack-of-all-trades guy. I don't think you're going to see him in the Pro Bowl anytime soon, Caden Ellis, but he's a guy that every team would love to have as an inside linebacker. He wears the green dot for the defense. He's a leader out there. And just a really overall, you know, really, really solid player, a guy that they lean on a lot. And they lost Troy Anderson this year. He was a second-round pick and just a tremendous athlete at inside linebacker. He's missed most of the season. Now he's out for the regular season. So that's been a big loss. But Ellis has done a good job to, you know, make up for that a little bit. But they would have had a much better kind of 1-2 punch if Troy Anderson was with him for most of the season, which he was not.
Falcons had 2 pick sixes last week. They do have the lowest sack rate in the NFL. And for the third time in 4 years, a bottom 3 pressure rate, which is one thing, I guess, that could bode well for Jaden Daniels. So let's go both sides of the ball. When they have the football, what would Atlanta's game plan, do you think, be against Washington? And then vice versa, when they're on defense, how do you think they'll try to fluster Daniels and Washington's offense?
I think you're going to see a lot of Bijan Robinson on first down, especially. I think you're going to see some Tyler Allgeier. If this is a weather game, if the elements are you know, going to be part of this. It's going to be a lot of the running game. And Tyler Allgeier is really one of the most underrated running backs, I think, in the entire NFL. He had over 1,000 yards as a rookie, and they brought in Bijan Robinson. Now they've formed a really good 1-2 punch. But, you know, in a game that has weather, you know, if it's raining and it's muddy, Tyler Allgeier is going to be a really hard guy to take down. He's like a bowling ball. He played linebacker a little bit in high school and college. And then as far as the defense, I mean, Jaden Daniels is such a difficult person to mark because he's so versatile. And one thing the Falcons did this week is they brought in Emory Jones, the former University of Florida quarterback, to kind of run the scout team to mimic Jaden Daniels. Kirk Cousins would have been the scout team quarterback, but obviously he's not able to mimic Jaden Daniels because of his mobility issues. That would have been kind of interesting to see had that been the case. But they brought in Emory Jones, and the coaches were very high on Emory Jones, what he was able to do in mimicking Jaden Daniels the last few days. So it's going to be difficult. You know, Jaden Daniels has been – I've been so impressed with him, you know, even just how he's grown since LSU. And it's going to be hard for the Falcons because they struggled against mobile quarterbacks, especially early in the season. Jalen Hurts, you know, hurt them. Pat Mahomes hurt them. So it's going to be tough. I mean, if their pass rush is actually as good as it has looked the last few weeks, that'll be a positive, but it's going to be a tough one.
It's going to be an exciting matchup on Sunday. What's your official prediction?
Oh, man, I don't know. That's a hard one. Putting me on the spot. I'm going to say a tie.
Love it.
Oh, that would be terrible. God, I'd rather lose. Ties stink.
They're terrible.
Yeah. Mark, thank you, buddy. We appreciate you.
Thank you.
Anytime. Thanks, guys.
Mark Raimondi of ESPN joining us on Grant and Danny to help us scout the Falcons. How about we get into Jaden Daniels in primetime? What do we expect from Daniels? We can open up the phones on this at 800-636-1067. If you want to predict Jaden's line or give us thoughts on how you think he'll perform under the lights, chance to clinch a playoff berth. Is this going to be a Daniels gem, another signature effort? Or do you think that in the sloppy weather, maybe this game is quirky and we don't see the best of Washington's offense? We'll get into that next on The Fan. Welcome back to Grant and Danny on The Fan. Danny's out today. Toby Altizer's in. I'm Grant Paulson. We're getting ready for Sunday Night Football. The Commanders have become the cool team, and they've got the cool quarterback. Everybody wants to see Washington, so they'll be playing under the lights, national TV, as they try to clinch a playoff spot with Jaden Daniels at the controls. They're 10-5 on the precipice of an 11-win season for the first time since 1991, with a rookie quarterback and a first-year head coach leading the way. Daniels, just 17 touchdown passes in his first 14 games. Now sitting at 22 going into
Incredible. The
final two games. That's what a five-tutty performance will do for you.
Oh, yeah.
A career day for Jaden Daniels in terms of touchdown passes that he probably won't supplant. He might at some point in his career get to six, but you know, there are guys that have played hundreds of games at the quarterback position that have never thrown five touchdown passes.
Especially in Washington, the last person to do it was in 91, Mark Rippon, which was the legend of the game on Sunday. So I thought that was cool. But yeah, I mean, an all-time performance, one where he needed to go win the game and he did it, which was so impressive because there was just nothing else that seemed to be going their way. Defensively early, they struggled, and yet, you know, he's able to go out there. Once they were able to calm things down a little bit, five turnovers, he overcomes it all. Incredible performance last Sunday. Hopefully he can replicate it this Sunday.
Yeah, I said this with the Junkies. I was on with them Monday morning right after the game, but I wasn't on air at all this week since that Eagles game with the Christmas holiday. I took off to be around the fam and around the kids leading up to Christmas. But what I was so impressed by this past week with Daniels was how he responded to the adversity.
Yeah, big time.
It was the first time all season that he's thrown two bad interceptions in a game. Against Dallas, he had two picks. One was the Hail Mary at the end of the game, I think. if you look at the pick to McCaffrey earlier in the game, arguably his worst of the season in terms of like middle of the field, well overthrown, normal rookie stuff. That should happen 7, 8, 9 times, bad interceptions in a rookie year. It's happened a couple of times all year for him. but he kept coming. Then late in the game, he comes out with like a little under 4 minutes to play. They get another crack at Philadelphia after falling behind, and he throws an interception that might have ended the game. They got lucky to even get another opportunity, thanks to the Devontae Smith drop, and he got another crack at it. But the idea as a young guy to be so unflappable and to just be unfazed by everything, like to throw that pick, and then you've got to go right back out onto the field at the risk. Now most guys are going, what if I throw a third pick and I end the game? He's going, what if I throw a fifth touchdown and I win the game? Well, and that's the difference to me between just a completely undaunted personality like him and a normal young QB.
Yeah, and you think about the confidence that that instills in the rest of the team, right? When Jaden goes out there and the second to last drive of the game, he's got a chance to go win it because, you know, you just think back to that spot. If you're like me, you're sitting there, standing in front of your TV watching, thinking, this is his moment. This is where he's going to go win it. And then he throws a pick, and you're like, oh, gosh. But the defense thinks, wait a minute. Let's get it back to five one more time.
Exactly.
And see if it happens. And sure enough, with the help of Devontae Smith, they're able to get the ball back to five, and he goes and wins it.
Here's the best compliment you can pay, or I can pay Jaden Daniels at this point. The second Devontae Smith dropped that ball, and the Eagles were kicking a field goal to go up five, would have been, I thought they're going to win the game. I don't remember having that kind of confidence. Again, this is in a young quarterback who's thrown two bad picks, happened to have also thrown four touchdowns. But coming right back on the field after the late middle of the field interception crossed his body, like broke a rule, right? But you're just like, that's so uncharacteristic and abnormal. He ain't doing that again.
Yeah.
And on top of that, in those end of game sequences where you can't give anything deep, so you got to play deeper, you're giving some stuff up in the middle of the field. And you got a quarterback who is going to scramble and create and extend and make plays. It's really, really hard to defend.
Yeah, you just don't feel that way like you're talking about, though, about many quarterbacks in the league. Like, I mean, when Patrick Mahomes got the ball back with 13 seconds, you're like, well, maybe, right? Like, there's still time on the clock. And Josh Allen or someone like that, Jaden Daniels is approaching, not that level of those guys, because those guys have done it for years, but he's in that conversation now with guys who are like, ooh, you might have left him a little bit too much time. He can go win this thing.
Yeah, and it wasn't like a time situation. It was, I think it was 1:59 or 2 minutes on the nose or whatever. They had a couple of timeouts, although they should have had three.
Yeah.
I still don't know why Dan Quinn burned that.
Don't get that.
First one before the field goal, but didn't matter in the end. But to go right down the field seamlessly and probably too quickly almost, if anything.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there was just no resistance. Made all the throws, made all the right decisions. It was awesome. And now he's got another chance, this time to punch a playoff ticket. If you remember back in 2012, Griffin, we remember that 2012 7-game winning streak as like Robert Griffin just carrying 52 players. That's not really how it happened. He was super banged up from the Ravens game on. In fact, he missed one of the games completely against the Browns. Cousins in that game threw for more yards than Griffin did in any game that season. I think it was right around 327 yards, if memory serves, in Cleveland. But in that Week 17 clincher against Dallas, RG3 was like 9 of 18.
Yeah.
And he was limping all over. The story in that game was Alfred Morris.
Alf, man.
Running for 200 yards and three touchdowns. So even though they won the division and Griffin changed the whole organization, was the face of the operation, won the Rookie of the Year, and it was kind of in 2012 what Daniels has been to this organization this year, the shot in the arm. He didn't really have that signature final game. I'm hoping and I'm thinking Jaden's going to have one this weekend. Like, it doesn't need to be Cincinnati, which I still think was the game of his season. 21 of 23 for 254, Monday Night Football, two touchdowns. The one that put the game away to Terry McLaurin was ridiculous. But it would be really nice if he could, in a clincher, doesn't even have to be the five-touchdown game against Philly, but just a clean New Orleans-like 25 of 30, couple hundred yards and a couple touchdowns, kind of the type of game he's had all year, and punch their ticket to the playoffs by adding to the touchdown total and having another of those like near 70 completion percentage type games.
Yeah, ideally, I'd like to see him, like you said, a 25 of 30, a 22 of 28 for, say, 220, a touchdown, two touchdowns, 40 rushing yards. Ideally, I want to see that, right? Because that would mean that you've got something in the running game, because you're not going to just finish the game with 260 yards. You need a little bit more out of that. But I think the crazy part about this, Grant, is going into this game, it feels like whatever happens, you just have faith that five can get it done. Whether it's there's nothing in the running game and he has to put everything on his shoulders. He hadn't yet shown me that he could do everything in a game and win it until last week. And when he does that against a defense like Philadelphia, he can definitely do it against a defense like Atlanta. And even if the weather gets sloppy, even if it's something where he only throws for 140 yards and he has to go for 80 on the ground, whatever it is, I think this is a big chance for him. And by the way, outside of maybe one performance all year, talking about the Thursday night game against Philadelphia when it was a big spot, he's kind of shown out in these games. Because even going back to the Bears game, I didn't think it was his best game, but it's his only game he's thrown over 300 yards this year. Obviously hits the Hail Mary. That wasn't a primetime game, so to speak, but it was the, you know, second window. Everybody's watching that game. You think back to the Monday nighter against Cincinnati. You think back to this past week in a big spot against the Eagles. He comes out and plays, I think, his best game of the year, but it's like right there in Cincinnati. Those, he's kind of shown out. And every time he's come into a spot where it's backs against the wall or a moment where it's you can clinch something or it's a national spotlight sort of game, you get a little of all of that in the same game on Sunday Night Football against the Falcons. I mean, I have confidence that he's going to go out there and play one of his best games of the season. And if he does that, then frankly, like, we can talk about Lattimore, we can talk about all these things. If Jaden Daniels goes out there and plays a B-plus performance or better, they win the football game.
Yeah, I mean, there are certain guys in the league that render almost everything else irrelevant. Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, you know, Joe Burrow, those types of players where if you don't have the right supporting cast, if you're lacking a pass-catching weapon, if there's something going on with the offensive line, like, it can be okay because you have a special MVP, unique type QB. Lamar Jackson's another example. Yeah. I think there's a very, very short list of guys. Jaden Daniels doesn't get to be on that list by the end of his first season, respectfully.
Correct. Yes.
It's just going to take more time. See C.J. Stroud last year and this year. See Robert Griffin's first year and then the years after. Adjustments get made and you got to keep proving it. And then after a few seasons of consistency, you graduate and you're in that pantheon. But what you're talking about, that rare trait and quality of a lot of other things don't matter, he has had this year. Like, oh, you got defensive woes and problems. Oh, you can't run the football against the Baltimore Ravens. He'll keep you in that game. He's that kind of player. He has been this season. So I think there's something to that for sure. And to your point, going back through the games, he's been at his best in the biggest spots. He was last year. That goes back to LSU.
100%.
You know, Heisman Trophy winning season, when he's playing Alabama, when he's playing in these huge environments with the country watching. He has signature performances. And there's a lot of questions coming off of an injury against Florida, if you remember, and that was the game where he snatched souls there. Like, this is kind of what he's done. I give him a lot of credit for that. I want to go back to something you said, though. You said you thought this past weekend was a better game than the Bengals game. Mm-hmm. That's crazy to me.
Well, and I understand why. Cincinnati, like, they literally could not have a hiccup, and they don't win that game, right? They scored every time they touched the football, which is incredible. So I understand that. But when you think about last week to me, there was nothing but five. Nothing but five. No run game. The receivers were, for the, outside of Terry McLaurin, just the guys, right? Jags. Like, defensively, they gave up 100 yards in the first quarter to Saquon. Yes, they played better once Jalen Hurts went out, but they still gave up 30-plus points. Like, there was nothing. Your only chance was, if you're Cliff Kingsbury, say, forget the run game, forget all this stuff. Where's the stuff that just involves five making plays? And that's what he called, and they won the game because of that. And he made mistakes. He overcame five turnovers. So to me, like, the Cincinnati game was great because of what they were able to do, and it was a team, and a lot of it's, you know, driven by Jaden. But when you think back to last week, it was all on his shoulders, and he was able to overcome so many mistakes and so many issues, and it was all on him, and he did it.
Yeah, I mean, the good of last week might have been greater than the good of Cincinnati. I'm just an efficiency guy. And like,
absolutely.
To me, that the Bengals game, he was nearly flawless.
Perfect.
In everything
almost.
That he did. And, I mean, in this past Eagles game, he was overcoming some of his own foibles, too. Like, again, he probably had his two worst interceptions of the whole year in that game.
Yeah.
So it's hard for me to say that was his best game.
Well, the only reason I say that
I think your point is taken. I mean, they scored 36 points against the number one defense in the league.
The only reason I say that is it more so proves something to me. And it's not, there was nothing wrong with what had happened before that, but I hadn't seen him. You know how it is when you have Lamar Jacksons and those other guys that are the elite of the elite. Sometimes they just go win a game. Yeah. Right? They just go do it.
And, he did it. He put on his cape.
And that's the first time I saw him do that. Because other times where you felt like there was no run game, they found other ways, other guys stepped up and made plays. Nope, this was all five. This was all on him. You think back to the Baltimore game. That was an opportunity where he had a chance to do some of that. He wasn't able to overcome it. But against a good football team, when everything was on his shoulders, he went and did it. That's why it's the most impressive to me.
So we're talking Jaden Daniels and the potential of a primetime gem if he's going to ball out with the playoffs on the line against the Falcons here. Who else could shine? What Commanders player do you think is going to play a huge game in their biggest game of the year? We'll open up the phones on this for you guys next. Want to hear from you on the MGM National Harbor listener lines at 800-636-1067. 800-636-1067. You're listening to Grant and Danny. Toby in today on The Fan. You're locked into Grant and Danny on The Fan. I'm Grant Paulson. Toby Altizer is in with Danny out today. Which Commander will shine the brightest in the biggest game of the year? Maybe you feel like it's Jaden Daniels, who we just discussed. I do think a rainy game is going to hinder him some. If it's going to be a driving rain, which it sounds like for some of the game at least, that might be the case, that makes it a little harder to sling the football around, obviously. But that might mean that Daniels...
By the way, you sleep on this. Terry McLaurin not being a hands catcher might help him in this.
Oh, like, sure.
Maybe just throw it to Terry and let him body catch everything. Yeah. He can still catch it in the rain.
He'll
and everything.
Fine. I think it could be a big Daniels run in the football game.
I would love that.
Could be like a 75,
what if he gave you,
85-yard game.
What if he gave you the signature RG3 against the Vikings long touchdown run this week?
Been waiting all year for it.
That'd be incredible.
Rips off like a 59, 65-yard touchdown run to put the game on ice.
Oh, it'd be awesome.
Get him to the playoffs.
That'd be
everybody
awesome.
Going
Could
nuts.
Could you imagine how crazy the stadium would be?
It'd be live. It'd be awesome. We'll hit the phones on this, but you give me your answer. Who is going to have the biggest game? Who's going to shine with the lights the brightest here?
Frankie Louvu. And the reason I bring this up is I think it fits exactly what you need to do in both the pass game and the run game. Pass game, I want to see them play aggressively. So I'm using Louvu all over the formation. I'm blitzing him from everywhere. I'm hitting Michael Penix. So Louvu in the passing game is still going to be the main menace that we're all used to, but I think he's going to be effective and really instrumental in the run game. How do you stop outside zone? Penetration. And what is a guy like Frankie Louvu allow you to do? Move him all over the place and get into the backfield against that outside zone and slow down Bijan, make him stop his feet, maybe try to go backdoor. So I think as long as the rest of the defense is playing discipline, staying in their lanes and letting Louvu kind of go do his thing and be a maniac, I think Louvu could have a really, really big game. And I think he's gotten a lot of national recognition this year. I think a lot more people are talking about him. I think this could be an even bigger stage for him to kind of shine and everyone talking about, wow, maybe we haven't talked about this guy enough.
I'm going to go off the grid a little bit. I'm going to say Zach Ertz. 7 catches, 65 yards, 2 touchdowns.
Wow.
I think he has one of his biggest games of the year. You're starting to dwindle at the receiver position. Rain to me means a little shorter, more intermediate, yeah. Right? Talk about body catching, guy that you don't necessarily, he's made some nice hands catches, New Orleans game going up the ladder, but you know, he's got a good catch radius, but you know, around the chest, pretty sure-handed, I think, you know, just getting the ball, getting to the ground, not going to be trying to fight for extra yards, but I could see him catching a couple of touchdowns, having a big showing in a big spot against Atlanta. They've struggled at times against tight ends, so I'll say Zach Ertz ends up being the star of the night. Let's go to Jupe in West Virginia, listening on the Odyssey app. What's up, Jupe?
What's going on, fellas? Hey, I got to go with my guy, Jameson Crowder, man. Listen, I've been calling all year. We've been missing him, and once he came back, you can see Jaden, Timothy Daniels is slowly building that rapport with Jameson. In the Saints game, he made some crucial catches in the Saints game, and those 2 touchdowns with the game winner in the Eagles game, I think he's going to be the guy that sets it up for us for a game winner. Definitely Terry, too. I think he's going to get his touchdown to break the record, but definitely James Crowder is going to be that key.
Jupe, what about J-Mo ripping off a punt return?
Ooh.
I mean, big spot for him, right? Getting a chance. McCaffrey was close on a couple of kick returns, by the way. But maybe they make a huge play on special teams this week. Going to be hard. No Jordan McGee, no Tyler Owens, obviously, on teams. Both have been ruled out. But to his point on Crowder, I was thinking about this. I actually was joking about this on an Instagram Live I did after the game at Grant H. Paulson. I always do these live IG reactions, like rapid fire from the press box. And it was just, I started laughing when I was talking about Crowder. I said, it's 2024. Mm-hmm. And Jamison Crowder just caught two touchdowns in a big game for Washington. Like, what are the chances of that? Just think about it. He was here. He was catching balls from Kirk Cousins in his first year as a starter in Washington. He left here. He's with the Jets for 3 years and then the Bills. And he's back now with the Commanders doing this. Like, last year he caught some balls at the end of the year and I thought, oh, fun little weird story. No chance he'll be here next year. He was at training camp. I thought the same thing. No chance this guy makes the team. Then he's in the preseason. I'm going, he's actually going to make the roster. Good Lord. And now he, with some injuries, could be their wide receiver too, could have a five-catch game this week as they clinch a division title.
Yeah, and he may not put up the big numbers, right? He might not go 6 for 80 or anything like that, but he could have an impactful 5 for 30, right? Like, he could be the guy on third and short that he has to go find, or like last week, 2 catches, but they were both big time in the red zone, and Greg Olsen kind of pointed it out on the first one. You have to have a vet kind of run that route because it's a very, you got to be patient, sell it's a fake, and then go out, right? And so having a guy with that sort of presence, those sorts of hands, and that sort of veteran understanding of a big moment, yeah, that's savvy. I think for him, he could play a big role, even if it's not huge in stat-wise.
I should correct myself. I said clinch the division, obviously, clinching a playoff spot. Probably not going to win the division, although it's still very possible with some Eagles help. They could do that in a week. Let's go to Noah and Frederick on GND. What's up?
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
What's going on, man?
Not much. I think Terry McLaurin is going to be our key player in this game. Terry's hands are amazing, and of course, he's going to break that record. So it's either going to be this game or it's going to be against Dallas. And to do it in front of a home crowd, yeah, I think it's going to be Terry McLaurin.
I think when you get to the red area, certainly inside the goal-to-go area, they're going to be feeding him the football to
Absolutely.
Get him the record. For people that aren't aware, he's got 12 touchdowns. That is tied for the team record. If he gets another, it'll be the most by a receiver in a season in team history. He's on his way to a career high with over 1,200 receiving yards based on his current pace. Remember, last year they had to throw him, and I'm not upset, they did the right thing, like this cheap pass at the end of the game to get him to 1,000 because they wanted to keep his streak alive. He's already over 1,000 with 2 games to play on 73 catches this year. He's also the guy that this fan base loves the most.
100%.
As obsessed as we all are with Daniels, and the video the team put out was amazing from Christmas morning, and all the kids, like my son, who get their Jaden Daniels jerseys, and all the family members who are giddy for their number 5. It's a great sentiment, and it's real. People are falling in love with the quarterback. But go to a game, what do they get the most excited for? It's the Terry chant after a catch. It's the big moment for McLaurin. Because they've rode with him, and he's rode with them for years through a lot of bad times. He's one of the only reasons to go to the stadium, one of the only reasons to watch. He stayed here, got paid here. He's just been quiet every step of the way at a diva position where guys act like jerks all the time. He never does. They love Terry McLaurin in this city, and rightfully so. And it's been so good to see him finally get his roses this year.
How many times do we have these things in sports where we're like, do this, get this guy here, or do this and do that and do... How much have we said, get Terry McLaurin a quarterback, whether it's here or locally or nationally? People are like, just give Terry a quarterback and see. Well, they gave Terry a quarterback, and he's had his best year ever. It's been so cool to watch, and it feels like, Grant, like on Sunday, with it rainy and with some of the weather and the way that these teams are constructed, it seems like it might be a, you know, in a box, like gain 5 yards, gain 4 yards. Like, there's not going to be a ton of explosive plays. It feels like your chance for an explosive play on Sunday with the rain and all the craziness that's going to be at the stadium. I think your chance is going to be once or twice finding Terry down a sideline one-on-one and seeing if you can make a play. That might be your only option. So, you know, if they can come up with one or two of those, that might be the difference in the game, honestly.
We'll have a lot to do in our final segment. More of you guys telling us which Commander will step up in the biggest game of the year at 800-636-1067. Plus, I got 5 NFL things, I think, going into week 17, and a death for a broadcaster who was a part of the NFL fabric for many, many years. It hit us pretty hard in studio this afternoon. We'll get into all of that in our final segment right here on The Fan.